A year ago, at the United Nations Annual Climate Summit in Glasgow, Scotland, there was a big announcement.
Good morning, and welcome to COP26 Finance Day.
Hundreds of financial institutions said they were joining an alliance to fight climate change.
It was pretty monumental. People were pretty excited about it.
That's our colleague David Benoit.
We need $150 trillion in order to finance the transition to clean energy. And that's a huge number, and no one quite knew where that was going to come from. And suddenly, there was a potential pathway to get to that money.
I look around this hall, and I feel optimism. Why? Because this is the first COP to bring together so many of the world's finance ministers, businesses, and investors with such a clear, common purpose.
We got, for the first time, really, the financial world coming together. We got the banks and the asset managers and the insurance companies, and they all said, look, we are ready to finance the fight against climate change.
But a year later, as the world gathers for this year's UN Climate Summit in Egypt, that unprecedented alliance?
It is not going smoothly. There are a lot of questions about whether the banks are doing enough and care enough about this. There are major schisms going on within the group that raise serious questions about if they're going to be able to get there.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knutson. It's Tuesday, November 8th. Coming up on the show, can an alliance of banks stay together to fight climate change?
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
What do banks have to do with climate change?
So banks have this enormous role in the world. They sit in the middle of everything. So their clients are the biggest oil companies in the world. Their clients are the smallest new green energy company in the world. And they're the ones who steer investor money. They're the ones who steer loans and hold the cash for these companies and really advise them on things like their future projects and where they're going to make money. They have so much power by either turning on the funding or not.
In recent years, some banks had started to take action on climate change, and not just because they care about the planet.
One of the things that really changed how this conversation went for the finance companies, from banks to asset managers to insurance companies, is they realized two parts about their financial status. One, there's a financial risk to having your money either invested or lent to a company like an oil company or a coal company in particular, because that business is slowly going away, which means they're slowly going to make less money. And then there's a huge opportunity of these new companies. I mean, think of Tesla, which came from nothing to one of the biggest companies in the world, market value-wise, on the strength of being an electric vehicle company. There is a huge hunger for people to put money into green technology and green bonds and green companies. And so being the bank that is the banker for those companies, being Tesla's banker, is incredibly lucrative for the banks. This isn't just like goodwill. This is a huge moneymaker.
Still, environmental groups have been putting a lot of pressure on banks to do more. And another person applying pressure was a man named Mark Carney,
who was a former Goldman Sachs banker. And then he became the head of the Bank of Canada. He led Canada through its financial crisis in that era in 2008. And then he became the head of the Bank of England and led them through Brexit.
In 2020, Carney became the United Nations Special Envoy on Climate Action and Finance. The UN tasked him with getting financial institutions to help finance the transition to clean energy.
So he's this guy who's got this pretty sterling reputation in the financial world. And then he signs on for a job with the UN to be their head of climate finance.
In this job, Carney's goal was to get banks and other financial institutions to form that alliance, the one touted in Glasgow in 2021. Joining the alliance came with several obligations, though. Among other things, Carney wanted the banks to reduce funding for fossil fuels, increase funding for green energy, and publish regular reports on their progress. The overall goal? To reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, and not just for the banks themselves, but also for their clients.
What Carney and other people started calling on the banks to do is figure out what the emissions are for where all your money goes, where all the tentacles you have as a bank go. You're advising Ford over here. You're lending money to Exxon over here. What does that contribute to climate change?
What would even be the point of knowing that information about what the carbon impact is of all the money that you're lending out?
The point is if we know what it is, the climate impact of those dollars, we can then figure out how to change the dollars. We can say this dollar over here is a necessary dollar. It comes with this sort of carbon. But we need to offset that by giving a dollar over here.
So effectively, if we know how much the carbon impact is of one business that we're lending to, like an oil business, then the bank may be less likely to lend that business money and that business will sort of be more likely to go away. It'll kind of starve without resources.
Correct. They will squeeze out the money of the companies that they no longer think are viable businesses from an environmental standard.
How big of a request is that?
It is a massive request, and the banks have no idea how to do it.
It was a big ask, but Carney was a credible messenger.
Well, one, Carney is a pretty respected figure, and most of them seem to believe that he understood them. It wasn't like this was someone from like the Sierra Club or some climate group that had been pounding their doors forever. This was one of their guys. So I think that helped from the beginning.
Still, banks were reluctant. So Carney launched an international campaign to get them to join his alliance.
And he did a lot of public shaming, and he was out on Twitter. He was out in speeches saying, like, look, if you're not with us, you're going to be behind. You're going to be on the wrong side of history kind of thing.
The companies and those who invest in them and lend to them who are part of the solution will be rewarded. But those who are lagging behind and are still part of the problem will be punished.
And then he used his ability as a political figure in the world to get people like Boris Johnson, who was the prime minister of Britain at that point, to start sort of beating up on the banks too and saying, we need this to come. We need you guys on board.
In April of 2021, Carney formally announced the creation of the alliance. It was called the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, or GFANZ. And while some big banks had joined, like Citigroup and Bank of America, there were still some holdouts.
Some of the banks were not receptive because they're skeptical of their ability to do this work and they don't quite understand the climate impact. And then a lot were skeptical because they didn't want to sign up for a group that was telling them what to do and being cajoled and browbeaten into climate changes that are not good business changes.
To keep the pressure on, Carney decided to use the UN climate conference in Glasgow as leverage, which was happening in the fall of 2021. If the holdouts didn't commit in time, they wouldn't have their logos on conference materials or get prime speaking slots, all of which would show off their climate commitments.
And he had this event always in the future, this event in Glasgow, where the world was going to be watching. And he used that to his political might to say, look, if you're not on board by Glasgow, people are going to know and you're going to be the ones left out and you're not going to get credit and you're going to get beaten up.
The strategy worked. Big banks like J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs decided to come on board. And by the time of the 2021 Glasgow summit, Carney had pulled together 450 major financial institutions from 45 countries. Here he is speaking at the conference that year.
Zero. So make no mistake, the money is here if the world wants to use it. GFANZ covers the entire waterfront of finance.
And the world really took notice, and they said, wow, this is a big deal when you add up the commitments that all these people have made. And they were making commitments to how they were going to use their financing going forward. So they were going to commit to green financing on the one hand and to reducing their lending to fossil fuels on the other hand. Like, what I remember is Carney saying, look, this is the world's financial plumbing coming together, and you may not understand how important this is, but this means we can pay for the transition to clean energy to stop climate change.
But since that pivotal moment last year, not much progress has been made, and the group itself is on shaky ground. That's next.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
This episode is brought to you by Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync, so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, giving ambitious companies like yours the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
After last year's UN conference in Glasgow, things seem to be going pretty well with Carney's alliance.
So the banks start agreeing to talk, and there are meetings, and CEOs are talking as part of this group, and they're all trying to figure out how to do it. They've pledged to do something, and the roadmap to get there has never been made. So they're all sort of in their own little worlds trying to figure out, well, how do I understand what my business is on these terms? And how do we change it to get there?
But then three things happened to slow the alliance down. First, Russia invaded Ukraine, creating a global energy crisis.
And a bunch of the banks said, hey, that thing about reducing our funding to fossil fuels, we can't do that right now because we have to fund a huge international crisis where we need natural gas right now to power Europe through its transition away from Russian energy.
Second, banks started getting pressure from Republican lawmakers who weren't happy with the alliance.
Mainly Republican and conservative politicians and states saying, hey, wait a second, you're a bank. You're not a government body that gets to decide what businesses are good for the world and what businesses aren't good for the world. And it's not okay that you are trying to stop funding coal companies, or it's not okay that you're pledging to defund fossil fuels in the future.
Here's the Republican Attorney General of Texas, recently on Fox News.
If these banks are basically cutting off lending, and there's these largest banks in the country and some in the world, if they cut off access to credit for supply, looking for supplies of oil reserves and gas reserves, that's going to have a very negative impact on consumers, and it's going to make us...
And if they continue down this road, states like Texas and West Virginia threaten to make it more difficult for banks to work with municipalities and pension funds there.
Several states' attorney generals are now investigating the banks over joining this group, which is only going to make it harder for them to collaborate.
Finally, the alliance published official guidelines saying members should restrict financing for fossil fuel projects and end new coal funding. Criteria like this were always expected to come out eventually, but some of the banks still had a strong reaction to it.
And what happened was the banks totally freaked out. They felt that the UN was suddenly ordering them to change the pledges they'd made and threatening them with kicking them out of the UN groups if they didn't abide by these new rules. And they really got pretty mad about it.
Why were the banks so upset?
What they say is, you're changing the goalposts on us. It got to the point where some of the banks said, we're so afraid of being told what to do that we're going to have to leave this group if you can't assure us that the UN has no authority to tell me what to do.
Why are they so afraid of being told what to do?
Well, there are a couple reasons. The biggest was they feel like they need to make their own decisions on a business level and they can't let another group tell them what to do, or they'll have trouble with their shareholders, or they'll have trouble with lawmakers and regulators who do tell them what to do.
So how did the alliance and the UN respond once banks started to object?
It took them a while. And this is one of the reasons why I think the group is having some trouble right now. They weren't able to come out quickly and say, no, don't worry about it, banks. We understand your concerns and don't worry about it. Stick to your pledges and go make your plans like we always talked about. That's what they said eventually, but it took them a couple months. And in the meantime, the banks were really stewing about this, and that's why it started to leak out, I think, and why we started to hear about this. So eventually the UN said, no, banks, our job isn't telling you what to do. You get to make your plans. We know that it's in the best interest of everyone for you to make your own plans, but it took a long time.
A spokeswoman for the alliance said the group is working with members to resolve their challenges and meet climate goals. Carney, the group's co-chairman, tried to reassure the banks and said publicly that none of them told them that they thought about leaving.
Mark Carney came out pretty quickly in June and also said, like, I think that wording wasn't right. It was way too harsh. Don't worry about it. But he's been caught a little bit in the middle here of trying to walk both sides. And he's come out and said, look, we think there's still value in this. Our alliance is still growing. We have more than 550 companies. He's defended the group for sure, but walked that line of, but we're not going to push the UN rules.
Well, what is the point of an alliance, though, of an agreement among a lot of people, if each member of the group can kind of just decide whatever they want to do for themselves?
That is the question, I think, Ryan. I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people say, look, the UN putting this in firm writing and saying the banks get to do what they want kind of neuters the group. It leaves them wondering, well, what's the stick? What's the point? Now, the alliance would say, our point was never to have a stick. We were never going to be able to force the banks to do anything.
On Sunday, the UN Climate Summit began its 2022 meeting in Egypt.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, welcome to Sharm el Sheikh. I would like to welcome you all to this 27th session of the conference.
David says that at last year's conference, the Bankers Alliance was met with fanfare. But now, it's being met with questions.
Mark Carney's group is certainly, it's been in the news and in the spotlight, and a lot of people are asking these questions about, well, what's the point of your group, and what's the progress, and how well are you doing? And so Carney's group will be reporting on some progress and sharing more facts.
What do you think the future of this alliance is?
I think the alliance stays together. I think it's like, it's too big of a deal for the banks to walk away at this point. I don't anticipate it collapsing. I think they still have a lot to work out in terms of communicating together and the rulemaking. And I think we'll see reports come out of it. I think it will help the banks be able to share information and make plans. But I don't know that we can answer whether or not it's going to be the grand vision that everyone hoped it would be. And I think if it fails, someone better have a better idea.
That's all for today, Tuesday, November 8th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Amrith Ramkumar. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.